To jest podcast Big Book Cafe, literatura na żywo.
Najlepsi pisarze i ich książki na scenie. Ważne premiery, wyjątkowi goście, zaskakujące tematy.
Rozmowy, spektakle i słuchowiska. Prosto z literackiego pępka świata.
Posłuchaj i sprawdź, co mamy w repertuarze.
Wejdź na bigbookcafe.pl lub odwiedź nas osobiście. Do zobaczenia i usłyszenia.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the debate about future of art, and of course, artificial intelligence. The debate is going to be about the end of art and AI versus creativity. And our today panel, our today conversation is a part of the project Youth Connects, which is organized together by the British Embassy in Warsaw, British Council, and of course, Big Book Cafe, this beautiful place that we are inside. And I would like to thank you, all those organizers, for working together and, of course, for financial support. And I would like to welcome representatives of the British Embassy with Tom Young, First Secretary Political, and the representatives of British Council with Rachel Luney, Director of the British Council in Poland. And, well, we've got very interesting guests. So I hope you will really enjoy our conversation. And our today's guests, our today's speakers are Rima Seli. She is a head of policy and international at the Design and Artist Copyright Society from UK. Very long. But Rima is going to tell us a little bit more about her work and her path with AI and art in a couple of minutes. And the second guest is Arkadiusz Ratej, Arkadiusz Arek. Yeah, Arek is a pioneer Polish digital artist and an IA advocate. And well, I'm really interested in how you in the way you are going to advocate for AI, because it's not going to be very easy. Well, my name is Sylwia Czubkowska. I'm a journalist and podcaster on covering technological issues, and I'm rather not so tech optimistic, so it's not going to be very easy for you, especially Arek. But before we start our discussion, I would just like to say a little bit about how it's going to look up today. So our discussion is going to take about an hour and a half. Of course, there is going to be a time for questions from you, from our audience, both in here in Big Book and the audience that are watching us during the streaming. So please bring up some questions. They can be asked also in Polish if you don't feel very comfortable in English. It's not a problem. And after the panel, after the conversation, there is going to be a small chance to have conversations with our guests downstairs by the wine and some music. So please stay with us after the panel. So after all those first words, let us start about AI, artificial intelligence. Before I will ask you the first question, please just tell us a little bit about your work. Maybe Rima, please start.
Thank you very much. And thanks everyone for having me today. It's been an absolute pleasure to come over from the UK and join all of you. And if anyone finds that I'm speaking a little bit too quickly or I'm unclear in any way, please do raise your hand and let me know. But just to tell you a little bit about myself and my experience in AI and artistic works. I think we're having a little bit of feedback here. Okay. So I work at the Design and Artist Copyright Society, which is a UK organisation that represents visual artists. We look after artists' copyright and help them monetize themselves through their copyright in their work. Copyright has actually been a really important way for artists to earn a living from their work. So these conversations around how AI might interfere with what it means to be an artist or how artists are fairly paid have come up time and time again. And so what I'm hoping to share with you today is not just insights from my work at DAX, but also from our own members. So we've surveyed our members about artificial intelligence. We had a survey where 1,000 artists responded. So throughout the talk today, I'm going to be referring back to evidence directly from our own members, from artists in the UK, on how they feel about artificial intelligence.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here tonight. As Sylvia said, I'm an artist. My main working field is the traditional art, but also the digital art. My main creative tool is the algorithm, and I think we are going to talk about it more later, with the great emphasis on the artificial intelligence, which is the kind of very complex algorithms that learns themselves. So thanks.
Okay, so AI, artificial intelligence, LLMs, large language models, algorithms, hallucinations. There are so many of those buzzwords that we are right now talking about all the time, but I'm not sure that people really understand how does it work, and especially with connection with art. So Arek, how do you create your pieces right now? What does it mean connecting art and artificial intelligence? Is it like AI is doing this for you by you, because you are, I don't know, have no ideas of your own?
Sometimes maybe, and this is a rather hard question, but because it depends on the need of the person who uses this artificial intelligence or who plan to use it. It's a tool. It's one of the tools for example, creating art. It's just like that. It's just another tool. And as for me, it's the popular chatbots. I use it mainly for in the early stages of the project, to, for example, brainstorming or to verify the basic concepts. It's very, very, very helpful, especially for a person who work alone, like I do. So it helps to speed up a work, this conceptual stage, and it helps to stay focused on the creative flow.
But is something like experiment for you, like the way of combining changing world because of the technologies and the art, or is it rather the part of you to telling the stories by through the art about technology and our society?
As I said, I use the algorithms in my artworks, so artificial intelligence, that being a type of the advanced algorithms, was just simply fits my interest. It's just like that. So I start with experiments. So I will show you some of these experiments for a moment, please.
Yeah, another strange word, deep learning. Yep.
Excuse me, I would... okay. These are my early AI experiments.
When did you start these experiments?
Excuse me?
When?
It was about 2 years ago.
Just so before the ChatGPT started and everybody started?
No. It was... I was interested by these algorithms. I heard a lot about them, and so I decided to try... try it out.
So experiment, just as you said.
Right. So first I started to experiment with creating reproductions of my old paintings. These are my old paintings made by ink. So I made it with a pre-made model. Here it's Midjourney. So another attempt, my attempt to use this model was to create a reproduction of the paintings by Aleksander Gierymski. And this is...
This is one of the most famous Polish painters, and the painting is very visible everywhere. I mean, everybody knew this painting.
Yes, exactly. And that is why I decided to recreate it by using an AI. The main idea here was to use the tool called the prompts, writing prompts. So the simple description of what I'm going to achieve. I experiment a lot with variety of different prompts, and this is what I get. This is the best result I get, and I made it because to show. I think it showcases that these tools, the artificial intelligence and the painting, they are totally different. So they are not the same. Both the paintings and artificial intelligence needs to be mastered to create something that you want. So even writing prompts is the kind of art itself.
So this is not the first result that you get after prompting this. So how many experiments you have to make? How many prompts you have to? How many prompts you have to ask those algorithms to get such a result?
I don't remember, but there was a lot of prompts. I had a problem with, for example, with reproduction of this background and this gesture of holding these baskets in this way. So this was most difficult because the model had the problem with creating the image of the woman with the baskets held on those arms.
But at least she's got five fingers, from what I see.
Yes, that was...
So it's not so bad. Yeah, but what are the reaction of people when they see your art, when they hear about your art? Are they like, oh, it's interesting? Or rather, why you are doing something like that for yourself? I mean, you are starting to use technology that can kill you. Maybe profession, it's not a good word, but can kill what we see as an art. What are the reactions? I mean, like,
I think one of the reactions is the curiosity. I think people are curious what's about this whole artificial AI thing and what is it capable of doing. Yes, I think the curiosity, and I as an artist, I'm trying to engage more the viewers in my artworks. So using this kind of technologies like artificial intelligence, but other technologies, lets me create something that can make the viewer the part of the creation system process. Sorry, of the creation process. So for example, also one of the examples of this idea is, I'm sorry, I will try to, clouds, yes. This is maybe about an artwork called Clouds. This is the...
Can you tell us a little bit more about this project?
Yes, sure. This project, it's an attempt to recreate the human phenomena called pareidolia in the context of artificial intelligence. The pareidolia is, I need to check my notes, sorry.
Tendency to recognize some familiar shapes in the clouds, yes, something like that. Like we see the clouds and we have a tendency to see something real in them.
Yes, exactly. The familiar shapes. And the very similar process takes place in the deep neural network when classifying the images. Maybe it's not so obvious. You need to go deep into this neural network. I made this model by myself. This technique is called the deep dream, and it's not my invention. It's a rather old invention. Created by Google engineers to check if the created artificial intelligence model works in the proper way.
Okay, so maybe for our audience, because not everybody can see maybe properly, there can be faces of the dogs, yes, in the clouds.
Yes, there are faces of the animals.
Animals. Okay.
Then different animals.
I see dogs.
Yeah, there is a dog and also a whale-like something. it's a rather abstract image. Put on the real photograph of the clouds. So I created that model, give it a photograph of the clouds, and this, as a result, I get this something that looks like the animals, and I just put it together.
Rima, what do you see?
I mostly see dogs.
Yeah, of course they are dogs, yes.
From here, they're all dogs to me.
Probably you are also a dog lover a little bit, yeah. So this, maybe this is how it works, yeah? We see those animals that we have a tendency to love a little bit. But Rima, what are the artists' attitudes to AI? Because, well, I was speaking quite a lot with artists, maybe not a visual artist. Yesterday I was speaking a lot with Polish filmmakers. And they are rather afraid of the change. Curiosity also, but the fear is, from at least my point of view, much stronger attitude. Maybe there is something else in your poll. What are the results of these questions?
So our survey that we did of 1,000 artists was so telling. It really showed a huge amount of fear and concern from visual artists. But one thing that I found really interesting is that the majority of the people who'd responded to our survey, asking their views on artificial intelligence and how it impacts their practice, had already been practicing for 10 years. So it would be a very interesting question, and perhaps a different question, if the only people who were responding to our survey were students, where in a lot of art schools, for example, artificial intelligence is considered more of a tool in the way that you might use Photoshop or you might use digital tools as part of your artistic practice. But certainly we had a lot of people really concerned, also on a philosophical level, about what it means to be an artist. So a really, really great quote that I'd like to just read a few quotes from our survey. We had about 350 comments from 1,000 people. So a third of the people really cared enough to give their thoughts on AI. And someone said, "What role does an image maker play in a world of infinite images?" And I thought that was a great question, because it really talks to the fact that with generative AI, you've got a huge amount of output at a fantastically phenomenal speed that artists themselves working on a day-to-day basis probably can't keep up with.
Yeah, I think this is really a very important issue. I mean, art was always something that we are living in the lack of. And right now with generative AI, it can be like any number that we can imagine, especially that the change is very fast. For example, a couple of days ago, Sora, yeah, the new algorithm and a new model from OpenAI, this video model, and it's also, of course, right now it's not open for everybody, but it's only the matter of time. So once again, when you were doing the survey with artists, fear, but also the way of understanding of what is changing and how what is going to be an impact on them, I understand. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's also worth saying that although there was some concern and fear that came through from artists, a lot of it was about how can we make AI work with us? So there was a lot of optimism from people. So we also had people saying it can create extraordinary things. And I think what we've seen already so far are things that maybe are a little bit beyond our own imagination. And people talking about it as a very useful tool. But really, it was about, let's look at the ethical implications and the lack of regulation around AI and try and imagine a world where AI and art can actually work together.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit today about regulations and these copyright issues. But before those issues, I think this ethical one are also very important. Do you have any concerns about ethical level of using AI in art and preparing art in such a way? Aren't you afraid that, you know, your art is also going to be used in future as a part of someone else's model? And come on, is it going to be an art or just, you know, a tool to prepare something commercial?
Yes, I do have Freight, but mostly I use my own models. So it's the just I don't use these commercial models a lot, but I use the popular chatbot. But I'm not afraid of any threats. Of course, when using this kind of tools, we always need to remember that every data we send to these models and everything we get from them, from these models, will be probably used in the future iterations or future versions of this model. So this can be a problem. I think in some way, not the artificial intelligence itself, but every artist is inspired by different artists. Maybe not in the such strict way like AI do it, is doing it by taking strict colors, the palettes and so on. But maybe if we could think about it like a kind of inspiration, because we can create a lot of things, not everything, and maybe it's not so bad to be. I met the people who would be glad to if the AI model would create something by using their styles. So it's just, I think it also depends on the needs.
This is interesting. I mean, using your style as a matter of being influential. Yes, influential also on the world of technology and our very broad sense of what is art, what is creativity. Yes, in such a way.
Right. In this collective mind, so to speak, you start to be a part of it.
More or less right now we see some kind of polarization between people who see how AI is changing our world, and we can see lots of tech enthusiasts, but also lots of tech doomers. And artists are rather doomers or enthusiasts?
Well, I don't think they're all just part of one group. I don't think they always necessarily speak with one voice. And what really showed in the survey that we did was a real difference between types of artistic practice. So, for example, a lot of photographers who might work as a photographer, for example, a documentary photographer or a news reporting photographer, the key thing that they are doing as part of their job is trying to capture reality as best as possible, in the best possible way.
Yeah, but that's the photography, but AI, it's not capturing the reality.
Yeah, so for a photographer, AI-generated photographs have a very, very different impact on their role. And one photographer had said in this survey that AI-generated photography is undermining the professional reputation and it's destroying the public trust in what they do.
But I think it's really important to ask also a question, is it a photography? Because lots of photographers right now are trying to persuade people not to call those images photographs, because they aren't true. Yep. They are just illustrations. So this is also an interesting part. I mean, how we call what is created by AI, is it an art?
Well, these are photographers who are thinking about it in terms of the deep fake issue. So if you can see a photograph or what looks like a photograph and believe it to be real, but it has only been generated through some prompts, then that's where, for photographers who make a living from trying to convey a real situation, they do feel a very, very strong threat to their reputation and their industry by, you know, these deep fake images of war and conflict zones, images of celebrities doing things they're not actually doing. That was where a lot of the concern was coming from in terms of the deep fake and the reputational images and reputational issues from photographers.
Right now we more or less are touching the issue of regulations and law. Do artists have such a feelings that they need a regulation on AI?
Yeah, so we asked artists specifically that question. Do you think AI should be regulated? And over 80% of people agreed. There was a very, very strong sense of what regulations look like and what they can do. So in a lot of the responses that we had, artists actually seem to be really, really up to scratch on what regulation looks like. They seem to really know their law, actually.
So what should be? What should be? What should it? What should it be for artists to feel safe and to feel really good with AI?
Well, I think it's something that you were touching on about what the system is and what the system does. And I think for a lot of people, we don't really know how an AI is trained and what it's trained on. There's a real lack of transparency about whether someone's image has been scraped from the internet and been used for AI training. Maybe even personal data might be used for AI training. We just don't know. And so it's a black box. So one of the first things that we would call for from DAX, but also all of the artists that we spoke to, such a large majority of them wanted to see some kind of regulation that said these models have to be transparent about what they're using for AI training.
So transparency, but who's going to look up for this transparency? I mean, will artists gonna have enough knowledge to understand this, or there may be some special some offices, some central decisions made upon those regulations? Because we do have such works right now in Europe. In European Union, there is an AI Act. In UK, there is also started to be some working on regulations of AI. In United States, there is an executive order from President Biden. Do you feel that those attempts to regulate AI are enough for also art branch, or maybe they don't see those problems?
In terms of artists, I mean, two things that really came across from our survey once again is the idea of control, credit, and compensation. So in terms of transparency, I think what a lot of artists felt was that that would be the first step to be able to get the other three. They want to know whether or not their work had been used without their consent. Had consent been given by someone else? Would they actually get a payment for this? And so once you have a sort of transparency mechanism within law, which is regulated, it can then also give a lot more benefit to artists as well. And we really think as well that artists should be compensated for the use of their work when it's been used in training data, because really this is what copyright is for. It protects the right of an artist to control the use of their work, how it's used, when it's used, and also ask for a fee for that use as well.
So what are the differences between European ideas for regulation, those from UK and maybe United States also, if you have any knowledge about them?
Yes, so actually the three are in slightly different arenas at the moment. And I think the EU has done the most for artists and creators in terms of moving forward with regulation that gives that type of transparency. The UK is somewhat far behind, actually. We had quite a nice looking law that protected artists very well. And the UK said that they would like to encourage AI development in the UK by watering down copyright. And I think for a lot of people, it felt that there was no real evidence that that was needed, that actually a fair system is one where AI developers and AI training models are paying and are actually, you know, applying the law properly as they should, as any industry should. So a lot of pressure was put on the UK government by creative industries to push back on a weakening of copyright law, which was actually successful in the end. So at the moment, the UK is still watching and waiting to see what happens in the rest of the world before making any decisions, so it seems.
I think this is the case really of all the world, even in the European Union, when we almost have right now AI Act. It's not going to work like immediately. It's going to take at least 2 years to make it work in every country. So it's fast, but it's not super fast. I mean, especially when we see how fast is the technology right now. And Arek, do you feel that you as an artist need such a legal compensations and better help from the copyright law?
To be honest, I didn't think about it too much. Too much, because I'm not the kind of person that thinks about the low things, and so I just rather to I prefer to be an artist still.
I think this is the usual problem of the artists. Yep, like they are artists.
Yes, I think it is. But of course, I am aware of these risks for the artists, as you said about the use of the artworks to train the models. But I think there are other risks, not maybe correlated too much with this kind of low things. I think for someone the fact that these models are very very. Very efficient. They can give you the results in the seconds. But I think for some people it made them lazy. So if we let these algorithms be creative by ourselves, this is risky. I think it's just it depends from the artist, of course. But I think if we if we use too much this AI, we can it's makes our creativity to burn out. I think to be less creative to let us less creative people.
Interesting, because when we started our conversation today, you started with this this words that you use AI because it helps you with creativity. So on one hand, it helps, but in the other hand, it can be a killer for creativity.
Right, exactly. That's what I said. And I use this mainly for brainstorming, as I said, but it's because I work alone, and this kind of conversation, this kind of communication helps me a lot in shaping my concepts. But of course, there are a lot of hallucinations in this conversation, as to say. And everything that is very important and is crucial for my artistic work, there are always I need to verify it. I use it just as a tool. It's not some kind of oracle or something like that for me. It's just a tool always.
Aren't you afraid that AI is going to be just a better artist that you are? We'll understand better people and our needs for an AI for art. And, you know, what's the place for us then?
I am not afraid of such a situation, but I'm more afraid maybe of people who decide what is the art and what is not. Because this is a rather subjective matter, the art itself. We know some examples in which the AI made images winning the competitions, the photograph competitions. We all know that these kind of these examples, and who is and I think that the jury is they are. I wonder why they make such decisions, because we can discuss it are they right or wrong, but. I think it's always at the end of this whole process that the human who evaluates these artworks and this, because machines themselves will not initiate any process. They are just answering our questions. They don't have a need for creating or something like that. They are just only tools.
So maybe this is also one of these questions, those problems that has to be regulated. I mean, when we have where is the level when we still have art and where there is only a product of AI, for example, what if there are any such situations, who is going to be a winner? I mean, the person who was prompting or the person who prepared algorithm? Or the persons, because it's not the work of one man. So this is like a question, like, who is the creator in this creativity?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. I often think about AI and how governments and how public have tended to think about it as being something to help us improve productivity. So, for example, in the UK, a lot of the talk around AI is how it can benefit healthcare, how it can benefit the work environment, how it can really, you know, make efficiencies. In that conversation, what that means is that AI is being used by someone rather than being used by the individual. It strikes me that we're talking about sort of corporations using AI to on people rather than the other way around. I think where the really interesting questions lie is in how artists and creative people use it themselves and harness it themselves. And with models like ChatGPT and Stability and generative AI models, all people are doing is pressing a button to get an output. What I think needs to improve is this connectivity between the person and the product. And there's actually a huge amount of skill in the work that you're doing and being able to build your own models. There's a huge amount of skill and knowledge, but most artists don't have that. So if we don't want a world where people are just pressing a button to create an image, then we should really encourage more people to understand AI, be taught skills around AI, for this to be part of education, be part of arts education. And that way people can actually do and use it in a really, really creative way.
Especially that right now, at least right now, because it can change, because it's changing very fast. When we get those images or videos in the future, they have this tendency of this AI flavor. You know what I mean? We can feel it. It's not human made. Even though there are lots of them. I mean, there is not such a number to end the process. But it's a little bit like everything is the same right now.
Yes, I know. I know this feeling, that feeling.
I don't have a name for this right now, but I'm sure it's going to be some kind of name in future. Like, you know, this, you know what I mean? We see those pictures, there aren't pictures, those illustrations, those graphics, and you can feel it's not human made. They are too nice. There's a name? Yeah. Uncanny Valley, yeah, but Uncanny Valley, it means when you have a contact with a robot also, and you just are humanoid. And you can feel strange because it mimics people. Also, it also applies for this. Okay, so maybe at Uncanny Valley, it can be also like that. This feeling that it's not human made. It's not us.
Right, exactly. And I would ask, maybe not so easy question. What is art? And if you ask me,
what is art?
Okay, I don't know. Of course, there is no single. I don't know. There is no single question answer. Sorry, for that question. But if we're talking about the art that is being made by the AI and algorithms, these are the artifacts of art in this sense that they are the images, just an images, that looks like photographs, for example. But art is not just an image, just an artifact. It's an artist, it's himself or herself. It's the whole story behind these artworks. It's in case of photography, there is a lot of craftsmen or craft to create a photography. And I think the people, the human can evaluate this himself. Is it art or not? Or is it looks funny, or it's touched something in our hearts? And this is art, I think. It's just a subjective matter.
There is such a very interesting short film called The Wizard of AI. It was prepared by one of the artists, British artists. And this short film, it's about the future of art and AI. And all this visual version is, of course, prepared with using an AI. And it looks great. And it really looks great. I mean, I think it would be really hard to have such an effort with traditional, even those very technical, but still traditional means that we used to have. And in the end of this short movie, the author is asking the question, if you're gonna feel in future need for human-made AI in such a human-made art in such a huge amount of everything. I think this is also the question. I mean, Arek, do you feel that you're gonna be you're gonna be needed? As a journalist, I have such a strong fear that, I mean, not that some kind of chat is going to write because it's writing better than me, but rather that there is going to be so huge amount of everything that it's not a competition between me and my colleagues. It's a competition between those powers that we are really, it's really hard to compete with, I don't know, with algorithms, yes, and models. So, and the product that they are giving in the end are really good enough, maybe something like that. And for many people, good enough is really good enough. They don't need anything more. So aren't you afraid that you are, you know, preparing the end of art for yourself?
I'm not so sure it will lead to the end of the art. Similar concerns were raised by artists in the beginning of early 20th century about the photography. They were concerned that photography would destroy the art and so on. And not only the art survived that crisis, but only that gave us the new artistic movements. So maybe it's not, maybe from this crisis, this is another challenge for our human's creativity. We are the one who are creative in this communication here, in this relation. So I think it's a challenge. I will be needed, and maybe not. I'm doing what I'm doing.
From the other point of view, Rima, because you are not an artist, I'm not an artist. We are just normal human beings. We are just the consumers of art. Do you feel that the art connected with AI can give you something special?
It's very hard to say whether or not art connected with AI could give me something special.
Because art can give you something special.
Art does give me, yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Yep. But not all art gives me something special. And so I think when we talk about who a visual artist is, or a creator, or a writer, or a song maker, for example, there are so many people who work in an industry where their work isn't the books that you buy on bookshelves, but it might be something like advertising copy. It could be music for an advert. It could be images that you find in magazines, for example. And I remember about a year ago, a British magazine decided to launch its first ever AI cover. I think it was maybe Cosmopolitan magazine or something like that. So the cover was not taken by a photographer. It was made through using generative AI. And the survey that we did highlighted, really, it's those people who make this kind of work that you see every single day. They're commissioned to take photographs for newspapers and magazines. They are illustrating books, for example. It's these people whose work's most likely to be affected. It's not necessarily what we would think of as high art that you go and see in a gallery that is showing the truest form of human expression, but it's something that can be replicated so very easily. And it's these very people who have said, for example, one person said, I have already seen that the company I work for has brought in AI technicians to replicate the style of the illustrations I do for the company. And I know AI will take my job in 2 to 3 years' time. So that it's really people who work in this industry in doing the everyday things that we take for granted as being creative, where the most likely harm will be to people's careers.
Yes. I may say I see those fears, I hear those fears. They are also the part of my job, my branch, which of course journalist is something different than being an artist, but still this is this creativity level of thinking about yourself. And but you know, I've also heard that, you know, for example, in journalists, that our job is going to be destroyed by the social media. It wasn't. Of course, there are many problems, but it wasn't destroyed. It just made us change a little bit, or at least try a change. So maybe AI also is going to be, will have such an impact. I mean, maybe not on all artists, because it's never like that, but on some parts they will have to combine their work with an AI or understand it better, or to be even more human, because maybe being more human is going to be an answer. There are also some papers right now, I think Guardian is one of those papers, who decided that they won't use any AI algorithms to prepare the articles, because they just want to give us the human touch. It won't be as maybe always as perfect, but it's going to be human. So maybe this is also maybe Arek, in 5 years we're going to meet each other once again, I hope. You won't use AI at all. You are going to do everything by yourself, or you won't. I don't know.
I think there is a border for this, what AI can do. And if you use these algorithms again and again, you notice that these outputs, these images, starts to be very similar to each other. If someone wants to create something unique, something in their style, then AI is not the best tool to use to create unique things. Maybe they are this tool is okay for creating a lot of outputs, but not an artistic images or paintings. And I think I will be bored with this AI, because other things that are more interesting for me than AI algorithms. I showed you some of my experiments, and another model. I could create another model because, for example, one was one of my experiments with AI was also include the creating my own model that is trained to create images based on the mix of flavors. So this is a kind of experiment. Also I tried to recreate the phenomena called synesthesia. So as you can see, I'm trying to find a connection between what's human and what's artificial.
Synesthesia is this when we can, for example, I don't know, we can feel the colors, or have some connections between what we hear and the sound and the smell and something like that. It's combining, yes? For example, when I listen to Prince, I always have feelings of purple. Always. It's going to be like, no matter what song, it's always going to be for me. I just hear purple.
It's exactly. I'm looking for this definition in my notes. But that's exactly what you said. It's
this is really interesting. And these are the results what you show us. I'm also waiting for AI or whatever, preparing also some smells. This could be really something.
I found this synesthesia is an experiencing one sense through another, such as seeing the flavor. And if anyone would like to try it, I created a website that you can check right now, or if you have spare time, you can create your own images. But you will need some to be patient, because I host this website by my own, so it
yes, you are not an
time.
Open AI still.
Yes, I am open, but
I understand not this power of financial support.
Yes, exactly.
Really fast servers. Yeah. So, but still, What was the question that you ask yourself for preparing such a flavor machine? Like, you thought then AI is gonna understand better the synesthesia and really can show us the whole idea?
Not exactly. I was curious.
I
didn't know what I will get. To be honest, I just started working on that algorithm, and it was a surprise. This kind of images was a surprise for me, and I think it's this surprise I get by looking at these images is one of the is something that is called that can be called creative. So, for example, I'm quoting here the person about, called Margaret Borden. I don't know if you know this person. Margaret Borden is a cognitive psychologist, which focus on the field of AI and creativity. And here I have one quote, very inspiring. It's very inspiring for me. No, not that. Sorry. That's the quote.
So creativity is the ability to come up with ideas or artifices that are new, surprising, and valuable. Okay. Do you feel also like that this is the creativity? Yes. Yeah. Short answer.
I try to be creative and make the AI be creative like, because I think it's to make something that is surprising and valuable for people who interact with the model and who have the possibility to create their own images, but just by experimenting with the flavors, gives you the feeling of surprise. This was my main inspiration.
But I think if I was to look at this the other way around, what I think the problem is with a lot of generative AI is the fact that outputs can look so incredibly similar, mm-hmm. so almost identical to a work that has been already made. And the only reason why it does is because it's been trained on that very work.
It's false creativity. It's not like real creativity. It's just amount of results that we get, not how creative they are.
And I think also that then brings into light again the copyright question, because a lot of AI models that haven't been trained on these copyright protected works wouldn't be able to create something that looks like them. And actually they might be able to create something a little bit more interesting when you have a prompt, for example, saying, give me something in the style of Picasso. If there were no Picasso works, then it wouldn't regurgitate a Picasso work. So almost in a way, by using all of these sort of known artists, known images,
styles,
it's actually kind of really limiting what that creativity could be.
So it's not like a real creativity. It's like also artificial creativity, you might say, something like mimicking people and just based upon our true transcendent creativity, we might say.
It's a lot of
for now.
Well, a lot of commentary has been around how the generative AI models are encouraging mimicry. So if you go onto some of the generative AI model sites, the interfaces, they encourage the users to come up with something in the style of another artist. So rather than, you know, the way that the model is made, the way it's weighted, is towards creating mimicry, but actually the model could do something very different. So there is actually the design of the training model of the AI company itself that has encouraged us to think in a very, very limited way, in a very uncreative way.
But right now we are talking about generative AI, and what if, because it's still what if, general AI, we came one day
right now we are rather talking about general AI while thinking about the Oppenheimer moment and all those problems connected with security and the Skynet or HAL or whatever. And we don't have a tendency to think about this general AI as being really, really, really creative and being really able to gain such a possibility to become an artist. Maybe this is the biggest problem for our future, bigger than those connected with security, because with security right now, like we understand the issue. Yep. We've got regulations. I hope we're going to have those regulations. And well, who would think about such a threats for art and Gen AI?
This is the. I think we would need to look into future to say what now right now the generative AI are just as matter of sci-fi movies and so on. It's we are
yes, of course,
far
of course.
Away from this idea, and it's hard to say what will hold the future.
But see, there are no such a sci-fi movies about this super intelligence that could become better artists than any human. And maybe this is the worst future that can be for us.
Well, there aren't many sci-fi movies about people making a picture of a dog in the style of Picasso.
Still, either. No.
No,
you never know.
Yeah, I think it's hard to think about, from my perspective, to think about the artificial general intelligence conversation because of how much generative AI has really, it's really got into the veins of the public. You know, there's hardly a time that there isn't a news article where artists or other creatives are concerned about generative AI, where people aren't thinking about the ethical complications, about their data being used, about being unable to get a career because AI will take their role. You know, even in a world where AI is actually moving at quite rapid speed and we're seeing new products almost every 6 months, we're still in a position where ultimately the public are very uncomfortable with it. And the only way to increase public confidence in any new system is through safety and regulation. You know, for example, we wouldn't buy a car which didn't have a seatbelt, not just because it's against the law, but because we would feel unsafe. And so it's very, very difficult to actually think even that far ahead when at the moment we're spending so much time actually trying to design a really good and safe environment just for generative AI.
Yes, I totally agree with Rima that if this generative AI will ever be possible, we have time to prepare ourselves to welcome it. For example, I think one of the very crucial parts of this preparation is also is of course the regulations and law and but also the education and the art itself, because art is a language that can be that people understand. And I use from my perspective as an artist who use the technology as its creative tool, I use it because I want to make it more understandable for the people.
And for yourself?
Also for myself, of course. I have a lot of fun by by learning this thing. So we need to prepare ourselves, and this is the crucial role of art and education, in my opinion.
Right. So maybe that's the moment for questions. Are there any questions from audience? Oh yes, they are. Filip.
Nasza Zosia. Does it work? How probable do you think is it that there is going to be a good working law protecting the artists? Because now OpenAI states that it will cover all the fees of people sued for using AI-generated stuff. in court when they are sued for using the AI generated stuff that is similar to art created by artists, then they are compensated by OpenAI. So in the face of that, how do you think, is it likely that the government will create a law that will protect the artists and protect them from big companies that make a lot of money, because OpenAI is no longer open?
It's non-profit, no longer.
Yeah, it's no longer non-profit, and it makes money. Has a lot of money too.
Do you know the case? Do you know the case with these compensations?
Unfortunately, not.
And Rima, do you know the case? You know.
To answer the question, from the perspective of the UK, I work a lot with the UK government and tell them the kind of give them the evidence base of what it is for artists and other creators in the creative industries to feel in terms of generative AI and how it's kind of eradicating their income and their loss of rights, and have really tried to make that very, very clear message that AI companies are working on a relatively extractive basis, that they're extracting the information that is available and using it for commercial gain. And never before have I felt that government has listened so much to that argument as being one of great concern. In previous kind of generations, when you had sort of the Napster or the pirate music sites, that didn't really get the attention of lawmakers. But this really has, for the first time in my work in this industry, really people are sitting up and listening to what a concerning situation we're in. So in the question of, do you think we will have a sufficient law? I do think that now we're in a place where it's most likely than ever before that we will actually have something that properly regulates, gives compensation, and really encourages and demands that AI companies have to be transparent about what they're using, and they have to pay for that appropriately.
Thank you.
But your question is also opening a very important part of the discussion. Artists versus, I don't want to always do it versus, but it's really like that, artists and the copyrights versus big companies, not only big tech companies, but also those big companies who are owners of the copyright laws for many creative products. And aren't you afraid that in the future, the biggest one, they are going to be safe? They're going to have a bunch of lawyers and understanding of the situation and the money to be really prepared for such a problems. And the smaller ones, the artists, they just won't be the real partners in this conversation.
Yes, I think absolutely that has always been a problem of the fact that there are a lot of big names that can afford to or not afford to, play by the rules. And actually, I think we're in a situation over the last decade or so when there was a time not long ago where I think governments still referred to Google and Facebook as a startup, Silicon Valley startups. And we've got very used to thinking of multinational, extremely well-to-do companies as, because simply they started in a shed, because they had very, very kind of small beginnings that then became absolutely phenomenal, that they deserve some kind of special status. But I think the AI conversation has broken that down a little bit. And we are now saying, no, we can't keep giving special status to something which is based on the extraction of something else. And that is starting to level the playing field a little bit. And what regulation should do is create a better competitive environment rather than just hand over the ability to kind of not play by the rules to big tech giants.
I can see such a problem, for example, with such a companies like Disney. For example, Mickey Mouse from this year, from
January, but the oldest version of Mickey Mouse is right now in public domain. And I'm almost sure that Disney company is going to be able to gain everything they have to make that their products and their figures are going to be safe in the future with AI. But I'm not sure if it's going to be such a effort from even smaller companies from some countries like Poland or wherever, which also have their own ideas and products and the parts of the culture, because they are just smaller.
I think what we're really pushing for in the UK is for more to be done on a collective basis. So the voice of smaller artists is only loud once you have really good collective bargaining on their behalf. And that's something that's happened quite recently with music streaming, for example. Spotify was supposed to be the legal version off the Napster. And in the end, it doesn't really pay individual songwriters a lot of money. So the UK has been in a position where it's really re-looking at that and what the law is underpinning that sort of lack of equity to the right people. So there's an opportunity here for real transformation, but it does mean, and it does need artists to come together collectively to speak to their copyright societies, for example. You know, copyright societies are there to do that bargaining on behalf of artists. And that's something DAX has done quite successfully over years. And that's very much what we want to do now, is to have a licensing mechanism in place and artists to actually be paid for the use of their work.
It's definitely easier for majors like Universal versus TikTok. Yep. This is the case when Universal Music decided to take off older artists from TikTok, because TikTok was using the music for, well, it was feeding their algorithms also. And they thought, the Universal is thinking it's the money and the popularity that it is gained as a result of using this music by the TikTok is just not enough. But it's major. It's one of the biggest musical companies. And it's still, this is not for everybody. Do you think that those situation right now, when you talk about government understanding the level of the problems there are going to be, it's really understanding, or it's just easy to say, yes, we hear you. And then when the law is going to be prepared, they will also hear the biggest one.
Probably, yes. but I think it takes an effort from everyone. So one thing that people have been talking about as well recently is the fact that, okay, if you make something using one of the generative AI applications, it actually says kind of in its terms and conditions, and maybe even a little bit more vocally, you need to make sure that this output isn't infringing copyright. It's up to you, the user, not us, the organization. I know that was sort of part of the question earlier, who has responsibility for this? And I think that's, again, this idea of public trust. If people don't trust this product because you can't even do anything with your outputs because maybe it isn't legal, then why do you want to keep investing in it? So if governments think, okay, well, we must listen to the big tech because they'll come up with the ideas and they'll be innovators, what I think they might also run into is a problem where they've invested all of their interest and time into something that actually people lost a lot of faith in. And I think that's the area where they're now starting to think, maybe this isn't the right horse to put our money on, so to speak.
We've got also questions from our viewers from streaming. And I think those questions are for you, Arek. The first one, maybe curiosity is more crucial than creativity when it comes to artistic creation.
Of course. For me, the curiosity is very important, but of course, it's not the only reason to be creative. Creativity is not only the curiosity, of course, but it comes from the individual needs, I believe.
And the second one, do you take pride in making these reactions, AI recreations? Compared to being proud of doing and all pelting, I mean, what makes you more pride, like using AI or this traditional painting, oil painting?
I think I'm proud of everything I created, because it's good fun. Creativity is fun. I'm not convinced that everything I made is good or anything. It's not so important for me. The most important thing is the creativity itself. Is being creative. This is the most important, and I'm proud. I can use such technologies because these are this can help in creativity, and also brings a lot of risk and threats, of course. But it's like playing with fire, maybe. I think it's interesting and inspiring for me as an artist, of course. It's for my opinion, for my side.
Okay, thank you. Some more questions? Oh yes, there is a question.
One question maybe for both guests, because we talk a lot about
dangers. Could you speak a little bit louder?
Okay, sorry. I have a question for both guests, if I may. Because we talk a lot about dangerous threats, we complain about AI. But on the other hand, I would like to ask a question. What would be the biggest asset? What is the most positive of AI in the in the work of artists, in the life of artists? What it brings to art?
So maybe I'll start. I think for me the most positive and thing is that it makes the creative process very efficient and fast, and it can let me prototype some ideas, some simple concepts, very in very fast pace. So I think that's most valuable for me. Yes, and for example, I think another example I can think of is that for people who are creating collages, or I think it's called photo batching, they don't need to search the internet, stocks for the images they want, but they can create their own images. They can create exactly what they want. So it also saves time.
I'm doing such a things. And I love it. I really love it. I mean, I'm not an artist, but I need sometimes to prepare some graphics. And it's really easier to prepare artificial elements for graphics than I can just use as a part of future picture for something for my podcast or whatever, and I really love it. I mean, I'm totally not an artist. I have no skills, and it really makes it easier for me.
And maybe I will add something. It's also using the AI can be also very creative, and from the perspective of artists, for example, when chatting with chatbot, for example, ChatGPT, sometimes you can. You can be surprised with what you're getting from this model. It can be very inspiring, and it can give you answers that you wouldn't expect from it.
You've got such a project with paintings prepared on the base of the poems.
Right, I have the...
I was trying to do something like that, but it was awful, so...
Yeah, I do have such project, but it's a kind of joke, to be honest. I tried to reproduce the appearance of the medieval Poland based on the book by Gallus Anonymus. And what's, I think, is maybe it's funny, maybe it's not. These images, for example, the appearance of the how Poland... Here, I'm not sure. Yes. So these images are from the selected fragments of the Gesta Principium. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's a Polish book. And these images come from the translated fragments, and we can see that. The AI model, the illustration that it generates, that sometimes they present the samurais or cowboys that's fighting abroad King Bolesław Chrobry. I don't know. King Bolesław First the Brave, I believe. So the main idea behind this behind this project was to create one was to attempt to create to recreate the appearance of Poland, of course. But another is another idea behind that was to show how does it work? How does these models try to reproduce something based without the context, without knowing the context, and using that. I think the results can be funny sometimes, yeah. Without context.
I was trying to, being inspired by your idea, I was trying to do something like that with DALL-E, so very simple, I might say, model. Simple. With the poems of Jasnorzewska Pawlikowska, and it was awful. I mean, it was funny. As a part of spending some, you know, procrastination. Gorgeous idea for procrastinating, but it was awful. It wasn't art. It was awful, but it was funny. So as an idea of really finding the limits of the creativity, it can be something new, I may say.
I think that's a really interesting thing that you said, because when ChatGPT first came out and when DALL-E first came out, people used them and for the most part said, I didn't really like what it came up with. And people were really disappointed in the result. And actually what I think is really relevant to that is sort of how we think about the early days of the internet. You know, at the very beginning of the internet, you spent ages sort of with your dial-up modem, taking a long time to connect to you, and then you go onto a chat room and no one speaks to you, and then you think, is this it? And now the internet is something so different to what we would have imagined it. So in terms of the question about sort of AI and creativity and how that can look, how it can really, really sort of enhance creativity and how it could be a good thing for artists, I think really at the moment we don't know. And we don't know because not enough people feel confident with their testing of it and what they've used it with. Just to kind of go back again to the survey that we did, we asked people, have you had any formal training? Have you had any sort of skills in AI? And 96% of people said they hadn't. So I think that really shows that there's an opportunity, but people really need skills. They need something to help them harness it. And that's when we'll get 5-10 years down the line, maybe something amazing between artists and AI. But at the moment, I think we're still in the sort of dial-up modem chat room, empty chat room right now.
So in 5 to 10 years, we can have something really interesting, but we can also have a bunch of problems if there won't be those regulations that we all were talking about. There is a time for one more question, maybe two, maybe one at least. Oh, wonderful.
I kind of have a comment on the previous question because I had this thought that AI can help make art more inclusive because some artists who may have wonderful creative thoughts can be motor skill challenged in a way. So thanks to this tool, they can have those thoughts on the paintings, but they can do the paintings themselves, you know, just, you know.
I think it's interesting point of view, guys.
I agree. As I said before, this using the AI, this generative model, to create some kind of prototype to check if the idea to verify the idea is one. You can use the AI model in that for this prototyping.
But with this inclusion, there are also questions about this inclusion. Yep. I mean, the models are as good as people who prepare those models. And if there are white males from Silicon Valley, mainly, there can be questions about this inclusion. Like, if it's really going to be, like, you know, full.
Yeah, I think there's obviously the bias question is something that's very, very pertinent for a lot of people. But I think the question, you know, touched on something that we don't always think about, which is how maybe the layers of privilege you need to have to be able to practice as an artist, you know, whether that's a physical, being able-bodied, being having access to something, being trained, being skilled. And I think AI has played a role for some people in removing a lot of those privileges to do something creative. That may not be for everyone, but certainly if that has that, if that is happening, that is a benefit that we can't overlook in the conversation.
Okay, so I don't see any more questions, or do I? Oh yes, they are. I'm sorry, because I'm sitting in such a place that I don't see everything.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to ask a question about the younger generation. So, Rima, when you mentioned that when the internet first started and we had really no idea what we were doing and it wasn't performing in a way we expected, it's kind of, as you say, where we're at really with AI. So are you advising in your role as working with the government, are you thinking ahead to when kids who are now 4 or 5 years old in 10 years time and the impact of them on education and whether they will even be creative individuals at all, because they probably won't have the same hang-ups about AI that I might, for example. So what's the future for our young people with regard to creativity linked to education? Thanks.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And I think it also comes back to safety. And, you know, safety, which is built into any kind of digital or technological device, has to be paramount. You know, already with a lot of sort of social media use, that's a footprint effectively for how mistrust and really unsafe situations are fostering and getting worse and worse, which is, you know, not is definitely not healthy for a younger generation. In terms of creativity, safety and skills have to be hand in hand. So if AI can be used as a tool and is being used as a tool, it's really important that that's being offered to as many people as possible and that it's part of a kind of creative education as well from the beginning. So that's actually part of what we're speaking to government about, is sort of the lack of skills that our artists are already saying that they have in AI, and ensuring that other generations don't feel left behind and aren't left behind.
Thank you.
So there is one more question, yes?
Yes.
Thank you.
And I think it's going to be the last one.
Okay, so the question is, I mean, it is kind of obvious how to approach legally artists who create something themselves and they have all the copyrights, but how is the situation for artists who work for large companies? They usually sign an NDA stating that they give their copyrights to the company they're working for. But when they were signing the NDA, usually they didn't even predict that such a time with AI will come. So, for example, is Disney, like, legally, can it use all the animations it has to produce another Disney film, like basically using the artist's work because it's just theirs? Or do artists still have some right to it?
I think that position is different in different countries. So what I would say will only really be from the perspective of the UK and the UK law. If you're working for a company in the UK, then your employer automatically owns copyright in your work unless you agree otherwise. So we don't have that system so much of signing the NDA. But in a situation where you are signing something that says you have copyright in my work, you're giving that right out for any use in future. Although I know that in some European countries, in Germany, for example, you can't do that. So there's no such thing as selling your copyright entirely. You can only really grant a sort of long license to someone, to a company, to use your work. That has become a question, quite a big question in many European countries of, I allowed you to do this with my work. Now something has happened which I never would have predicted. So I never gave you a right to do that. In the UK, it's a slightly different situation, but I think it would probably be down to sort of the national law. But it's a really big question of, if we can't predict something happening in the future, how can we ever have allowed that use in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So I think it was the last question, but we also will have some time for conversation downstairs with our guests. So thank you very much. Thank you, Arek. Thank you, Rima.
Thank you very much.
Big Book Cafe to centrum innowacji literackich założone przez Fundację Kultura Nieboli.
Tworzymy 200 wydarzeń w roku. Prowadzimy wege kawiarnię i księgarnię pełną dobrych książek.
Big Book Cafe.
Żyjemy czytaniem.